Hi, I'm Jacob Storr, and you're listening to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist. And I've never actually listened to a full episode of this podcast. I'll probably listen to this full one. Maybe.
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
What are we supposed to be doing today?
Today, like on the podcast?
Yeah.
Talking about Parashat Ki Teitzeh, and got this guy Jacob coming in, and it's gonna be a really fun episode.
Okay, but I mean, we've been wandering for what feels like forever.
I mean, yeah, but there's still more content. Like, there's always more stuff in the Torah, and then when there's not more stuff anymore, you start over from the beginning, and that's Simchat Torah.
So you're saying you turn it again?
You keep turning it, because everything is in it.
That sounds really smart. Where'd that come from?
Rabbi Ben Bagbag.
That's not a real person.
It absolutely is his name. Rabbi Ben Bagbag. He had a double name.
Is he in this week's portion?
No, he is not.
Well, I guess we better figure out who is. Yikes.
That was a massive non sequitur. Let's go!
So we know last week we did something a little bit different. We hope you liked it. We're going to try to, you know, see if we might be able to shake things up with more Facebook Lives or more Discord channel hangouts or things that will bring the Torah to life, even if it's not on a Monday morning when our episodes normally drop. But this week, we are in a new place. We had some judgment happen. We had some things happen last week. But this week, we are getting ready to build something new. It's not another tabernacle. Don't worry. We're not all the way back in Exodus, but it is something to be said about building a new community as we move to a new place. There's a saying, change your place, change your luck, and we are on the move. I mean, to be honest, we've been on the move for 40 years. Hopefully the luck would change for the better earlier, but sometimes that's not always the way it works. Sometimes we need a little direction, and sometimes we need a better design. And that's why we're really lucky today to have Jacob Storr with us as our featured guest. Jacob Storr is a workforce management consultant with ADP and helps organizations with everything related to their people paying, time tracking, onboarding, legislative compliance, benefits, company culture, DE&I initiatives, and I think there's probably more, but I'm not really sure how. Prior to moving to the East Coast after studying at the University of Maryland, Jacob grew up in the northern suburbs of Chicago, son of a clergyman, watching his dad lead a large congregation in spiritual prayer. Jake was also very active in Jewish youth group, teaching Hebrew school, and he spent a gap year in Israel. He enjoyed many summers staffing USY on Wheels, which is a very, very cool Jewish teen tour, traveling across the United States. And it was through all of this that Jacob realized he could unite his love for Judaism, helping others, problem solving, and networking, which again, seems like a lot to do all at once, and yet, here he is. At ADP, Jake works with organizations of all shapes and sizes to ensure that they are set up for both short-term and long-term success. He takes a holistic approach where he is not only able to help them from an ADP perspective, but he is also able to open his network to help them achieve their goals. Jake, it's so exciting to welcome you to Drinking and Droshing Torah with a Twist. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate you having me.
I'm just amazed that you're able to do this on top of all the other things that you seem to be doing at once. And I'm hoping you're going to be able to help us get a better design as we're heading into the promised land.
Yes, I jump at any opportunity to talk to cool people like you.
I'm really excited to hear that you think that we're cool. And so we'll try to keep those expectations high and either meet or beat them. And we hope that our listeners think the same. But I could honestly say that of all the people in this Zoom room, I am not the coolest. I have to be able to share that with my partners in podcasting. And so, Gabe Snyder, co-host, we're thrilled to have you back. Welcome back. How's it going, buddy?
It's pretty good. Great to be back.
What did you think about Idan doing your rundown? He was great, right?
Oh, I thought he did a fantastic job. In fact, I'm perfectly comfortable never doing the rundown again and just letting him take over. That's great.
Idan, executive producer, the person who makes sure that we get these episodes out on time. How do you feel about this new challenge? Are you willing to take on a new role as we head towards our promised podcast land?
wasn't really in my job description, so I can't say that it's something I'd love to do week in, week out. But, you know, we can talk on a week-by-week basis.
I hear that the next step is Midrashic mixology, that Idan's going to start making cocktails for the podcast. It's a rumor, but rumors sometimes are true. Anyway, we do have a lot to talk about because apparently this podcast goes in a ton of different directions, which, yeah, I guess makes sense if you're heading towards the exit. But as we're going out, let's make sure that we get excited to begin. Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Amanda.
I have a little bit of a problem.
What's the issue?
I don't know if I want to do this week's Torah portion.
Okay, why?
Okay, well, I know you weren't here when Ari Neveh, like, talked with us about Re'eh, but there we were talking about really troublesome history and slavery and issues, and I don't know if you know this, but this parsha doesn't start out so good for us.
Yeah, no, there's some, like, really, really problematic and deeply uncomfortable moments in this week's Torah portion.
But we're supposed to engage with those and own them too, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked on the podcast before about the times that we preach the text and the times that we preach against the text. It's still our text, and it's still sacred, it's still important to us, and there's still wisdom to be gained even from those things that we now look at and say, that was just objectively wrong.
Okay, so this particular parsha rundown might be rough and might be wrong, but it's still important for us to engage.
Absolutely.
You think we'll get any good things out of it?
I hope so.
All right, go ahead.
We start off with a bunch of laws around family, animals, and property. There are a lot of them, and most of them are based off of oddly specific scenarios. Can wives be taken as spoils of war? Kind of. Can you choose which kid gets an inheritance based off of which one comes from your favorite wife? No. What happens to an unruly child? Death. Can you leave a corpse on the stake overnight? Ew. No. Do you have to help an animal who gets lost or falls down? Yup. Do clothes have gender? Apparently. Can you take eggs out of a nest? Yes, but not the mama bird. Is there a Jewish way to build a roof with a little fence so that people don't fall off? Can I mix different plants or different types of fabric? No. Oh look, it's tzitzit. What are tzitzit? Special fringes we wear on the corners of our garments to remind us of the laws. Speaking of which, there are some more laws relating to sexual relationships, loans, promises, and divorce. I went through these in a lot of detail last year, so I won't do that again, but suffice to say, this section is deeply uncomfortable and wildly misogynistic. Now, here's a list of people who can't become Israelites. Castrated men, illegitimate children, Ammonites, and Moabites. On another note, be nice to Edomites and Egyptians. Quick run through of some more laws. Don't turn an escaped slave over to their master. Don't be a prostitute. Don't charge interest on loans, looking at you, student loans. Keep your promises to God. Don't be greedy when you snack on grapes in somebody else's vineyard. A woman can only marry once after getting divorced. Men get to take off a year of military service after getting married in order to, please their wives. Whew, that was a lot. Wait, there's more? I can't do that. There are a bunch more laws that relate to loans and weights and measures and wages and something about a millstone. Want more details? Listen to last year's episode. I gave way too much detail back then. Seriously, that rundown was like 4 pages long. Oh, by the way, remember what Amalek did to you in the desert, but also blot out the memory of Amalek, but also do not forget. Makes sense? Cool. And that's Parashat Ki Tetzeh.
That was great. I'm glad I wasn't on last year's episode, though, because that seemed pretty long. And I know, I think this Parsha has like 74 out of the 613 mitzvot. And while that was great, I really enjoyed it. If I had to sit through, you know, 4 pages worth of that, I don't know that I'd make it to the end. So I love that, though.
You know, I don't know the numbers, but I'm glad that somebody does. 74 seems about right. That, yeah, no, there's just a stupid amount of content in this Torah portion. And it's not all related to like one specific issue. There's no way to really categorize everything as these are all of the laws about purity or about family or about money stuff. They really go all over the place.
Yeah, I think there's intricacies too within each of them, but it's kind of cool. As you were going through it, you know, you would pull out, I couldn't tell you exactly every single thing, you know, repeat every single thing that you said, but you can glean from it different themes and different areas to discuss, whether it be how you treat this person or, you know, what marriage laws there are or, you know, we'll talk later about paying people on time. Like, there's a lot of different things, but it's cool to see that they're all, you can kind of clump them together into different, you know, themes and take a lot out of it.
Yeah. And that really is a huge line in this week's Torah portion of, like, you have to pay people on time. If you have a debt that needs to be repaid, you're supposed to not waver, not wait at any point to pay that debt, which is actually the same thing that's said about when you make a vow to God. If you say to God, I'm going to do this thing, you're not supposed to delay at all. So there's kind of a parallel there between the promises we make to people and the promises we make to God.
Yeah.
Jake, I've made a lot of design-based jokes, and I mean, let's be real, that's part of what you do, but you deal with a lot of logistics, especially as people are on the journey to figure out what their final picture might look like. And change is scary. When people are trying to manage a community, when people are trying to manage other people, there's logistics, there's community engagement, there's trying to figure out who's going to be on your team and how they're going to work together. And there are so many unknowns. But before we get into all of that, you started your bio with a really interesting thing, which is you said you're a workforce management consultant with ADP. What is ADP?
That's a great question. And I will start by saying it's not ADT with a T, like as in Tom. A lot of people get confused. ADT is the alarm system company. ADP, we're basically an alarm system for your business, right? Not an alarm system that you punch in the numbers and, you know, it goes off, but we help with everything having to deal with your business and your employees, right? So when, you know, you've been making the joke about ADP's tagline, always designing for people, even though ADP stands for automatic data processing, a couple of years ago, we redesigned or, you know, restructured, you know, what we do and the way that we portray that to people. And the always designing for people, the ADP, really is what it says. It's how do you help an organization or a for-profit, a company with 6 employees that, you know, are super reliant on every single one of them, or a company with, you know, 75, 200 employees, like how do you help give them the technology, the solutions that they need to help their people be successful at everything that they do, right? And you said earlier that deals with keeping track of their time, with actually paying them, with, you know, getting them onboarded, hiring, the benefits, like all that stuff. But really the deeper meaning or the deeper feeling, which I like to focus on, is it's really helping with the culture of the organization, right? And I know that's a little bit of, you know, what this Parsha talks about with just community, and Judaism as a whole is just huge on Kehillah and, you know, the community. It's the people of Israel. It's not the religion of Judaism. It's the people of Israel. And I think, you know, with what I do at ADP, it's helping those organizations build that community, build that culture. And while they're doing that, being able to deal with all those little nuances of, you know, running an organization and dealing with people. So that's ADP. Again, P with a P as in Paul, not a T. But, you know, just like the alarm company, we help to protect people's businesses and, you know, make sure their employees are happy and engaged and doing what they do best on a daily basis.
I think that that's really important. And I appreciate that you said that we're working on building a culture. I know in this Parsha, as people are making their ways towards this promised land, they're making their way towards a really big goal. And I mean, look, they've been doing it for some time, right? Hitting mile after mile after mile, and then sometimes sneaking back or twisting around. And it can be a really difficult place. But here, and I've said this a lot about our Torah, it does seem like they're trying to set up what an ideal society would look like in an imperfect world. Right? Not everybody's going to always be on the same playing fields, but they are trying to figure out a way to make sure that everybody is able to cross the finish line as best they can, unless, as Gabe said, they're in certain groups which are going to be held back, which I think is really difficult.
Yeah, it's something that we see in our society today. A lot of the things that I've been talking to companies about, you know, whether it be how to engage remote workforce, or how to remotely onboard, or how do you do Zoom calls to make people feel more included and inclusive? That's, I think, what the Parsha is really talking about. You know, we heard Gabe go through his recap and how many different things the Parsha talks about. But like I was saying earlier, you can lump it into these different categories and different themes. And I think one of the big ones is community. and making sure that you could have an organization that really feels like they're working towards a common goal, right? Whether that be the Jewish people going to the promised land, or whether that be an organization trying to make sure that their company is diverse and equitable and inclusive, and that people, regardless of who they are, where they are, what they are, feel part of that community, part of that goal. So, you know, we talk a lot about community in Judaism, but I think a lot of the conversations I'm having with clients and business owners and, you know, people of the sort, they're trying to really ensure that their organization has that sense of community as well. Because we know that if employees are all working towards a common goal and they feel engaged and part of that culture and part of that mission, they're going to take ownership and they're going to feel more apt to want to go out and work hard for the organization.
You know, I'm so glad you said that, this idea of, you know, why be nice to your workers? Because you want them to be invested. One of the things that really sticks out to me with this Torah portion in particular is this idea of doing things in advance, or doing things not necessarily after you've done something wrong, but in order to kind of prevent bad things from happening. The biggest example being putting a fence on the roof, making sure that people don't fall off the roof. And so I can really imagine that kind of being a link to a lot of what happens in a business, right? That you want to cut things off before anything goes wrong. You don't want that to happen. At the same time, one of the things I'm thinking about also in this Torah portion is this idea of like not delaying when you have a debt to pay or when you have to pay your workers. You're supposed to pay your workers fairly and on time. And I'm kind of thinking about this like tension that exists in some business communities of like, how do we balance our ethics with profit, right? How do we make sure we're treating our workers well and doing what's right for the business? And I'm wondering if you can, as somebody who like advises and works with and tries to help businesses, but also is talking about, you know, designing for people, how do you balance those needs of working for corporations or for companies and also for those employees?
Yeah, it's a really great thought. And one thing I always like to joke about in, you know, in my line of work is you always want to be talking about ways to get better before you actually have to get better, right? I joke that you don't just go to the mechanic when your car is broken down, like on the side of the road, you take it in preventatively. You go to the dentist preventatively to get cleaning. Yeah, sometimes you got to go in and deal with an issue, but to your point, you try to lay it out ahead of time, right? So I think, and look, there's what organizations can do, but then there's also, in line with the Torah portion, there's laws that are put into place for organizations to have to adhere to this, right? There's the FMLA, Family and Medical Leave Act. There's, you know, FLSA, the Fair Labor Standard Act, right? Like these are things that are put, that's pretty much Kitetze. Kitetze is the FLSA. It's talking about labor laws. It's talking about minimum wage and child labor and overtime and all of this stuff. The reason that it's laid out in sometimes an annoying way for business owners, because, you know, it's no one likes government interference, so to speak. No one wants to be told we have to do this. But the reason these are laid out there and the reason it's so important for a business to know about that is because that's how they're going to ensure their employees are paid equitably. And then it's, they kind of have that there. That's their 74 mitzvot from this parsha that are laid out there. But then it's on them to do everything else to create their community. Similar to the Parsha, here's this laid out, but now it's on you, Jewish people, to go and create that community. Same thing. You have a business. Yeah, you have to have certain laws in place, but you lay that out ahead of time. You make sure that your employees understand when they're coming on board, what their requirements are. You bring all of these things ahead of time. So all of that's out of the way and you can focus on the culture, you can focus on the work that people are doing and making people feel included and part of the group.
Okay, so I'm going to do something that I don't normally do, which is I am going to ruffle some feathers and mix metaphors by naming the heffalump in the room, which is to say, Jewish organizations tend to be notoriously bad about paying their people on time. Sorry, I'll say it louder for the people in the back. Jewish organizations tend to be notoriously bad at paying their people on time. And as an up-and-coming clergy person, heads up, if you want to hire me, maybe ignore this episode. Or listen to it, like really, really highlight it, you know? Hopefully it's a good pull. I want to know how we can actually enact our values that we're reading in our Torah portion, right? It's easy for us to say, like, do it before it gets bad, but it is bad. It tends to be bad, not everywhere, but regularly across the board, that there are a lot of Jewish nonprofit organizations that are known for maybe not paying their gig economy people on time or their interns on time. And I want to know, as somebody who is going to be stepping into a role of responsibility that it's going to be on me to respond to people who are going to need those wages, how I might be able to mix that urgency and that value call to action together in a way that's real and able to help Jewish organizations and culture maybe really embrace this quality.
Yeah, I think you just gave me a nice layup to pitch ADP to all these Jewish organizations. So, no, I appreciate that. But look, in all seriousness, this is, you know, people sometimes say I'm in sales. I really don't think I'm in sales because I'm not selling anything. I'm going out and trying to help people, which I know people say is just what salespeople say, so they don't sound like they're selling. But whatever, it is who I am. And the reason I came to ADP was because, like you read in my bio, I was able to mesh together the different things that I care about: helping people, problem solving, and doing the right thing, right? So yes, it's hard for organizations to sometimes, despite their values and their mission statement and wanting to pay people on time or wanting to have people feel included and inclusive, they just don't have the right systems in place. You know, I'm not going to knock their values. I think the values are there. They hear loud and clear from the Torah reading. They hear loud and clear from, you know, people that, you know, are working for them or that are in their field. But I think they just don't always have the most organized system of doing things. And that's where I'm passionate about what I do, because yes, it's you're purchasing or you're paying to use our technology, but you're using this technology so that you can focus on the things that you actually want to focus on, which is making sure that you have funds to be able to pay, you know, your employees on time and, you know, have a nice kiddush, of course, you know, to be able to have donations coming in and to be able to do programming so people want to get in the doors and you can raise money. And so that's really where what I do comes in, is we give people that technology so they can focus on their actual business goals, or in a nonprofit organization, you know, their mission, vision, values. And they don't have to think about, oh, did people get paid on time? Like, that stuff should just kind of run. But not all Jewish nonprofits are founded as a business. And even though they do a lot more than, you know, than just a normal quote unquote business, at the core, they are still a business. And that's why having something, you know, like ADP set up, or, you know, being organized in that manner, allows them to be able to focus on the things they want to focus on, which are, you know, like you said, the values that we read in, you know, every week's Torah portion.
I'm actually wondering if you can speak a little bit more to those values as they relate to you. You know, I'm curious how you got into this work, and if your Jewish values or your Jewish ideas, if something within tradition or within how you grew up really led you on this path. You know, where is that overlap? How did that come to be?
Yeah, and I didn't explain this earlier, but I graduated from the University of Maryland with a degree in business. And like most business majors who didn't want to go into accounting or finance, I had no idea what I was going to do. So a cousin of mine had said, oh, go sales, ADP. And I'm like, no, I'm not a salesperson. Like, I grew up in a shul there every Shabbos. My dad is a cantor. So, you know, I was used to dealing with people. I didn't want to be pushy. I didn't want to force someone to buy something. But my cousin pushed me and he said, look into this company and see what they're all about. And the more that I learned about ADP, the more that I realized, like, it was in line with what I always did growing up, right? I taught Hebrew school because I like to, you know, educate people and help people learn and understand, you know, different things about the world. Right, I staffed this USY on Wheels trip a number of summers, where I got to deal with logistics and not only bringing in values, you know, of Judaism, but also some of like the business, like managing a budget and doing those things. I was always that person, like Jewish geography. Like, I love to network. I love to problem solve. I love to help connect people so that even if there's nothing, quote unquote, in it for me, I like to connect people to help them. And it was just something I think I learned from my dad growing up in a shul. was like, you know, it's about who you know and being able to connect this person with them because they are looking to get a job here and this person's grandson is trying to get into this college. I was always a thinker and a mover and how can I problem solve? And coming back to the ADP thing, like the more I learned about ADP, the more I realized that's exactly what I was doing. I was helping people. I was connecting. I was problem solving. I wouldn't go as far as to say, you know, it's tikkun olam, but in a sense, it is that sense of repairing the world, helping businesses that are doing, you know, what they need to do to give people jobs and to sell their service or provide their product. So I would say that's kind of the upbringing. Those are the things that kind of led me to be able to say, oh, wow, I can do this for a living. But it also is pretty naturally just who I am in that I like to help people. I like to connect. I like to talk. I like to make sure that, you know, I'm treating others equally. And again, it all comes down to, maybe I didn't think about it this way 10 years ago when I started at ADP. Then I was just trying to, you know, change the world and, you know, do my thing. Now, in hindsight, looking back, I realized, like I said, I get to help companies build culture and make sure that tikkun olam and ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha are the values, whether they call them that or not, are the values that the company is living and breathing. And by being able to help them with paying people on time and onboarding people and giving them the technology they need for administrators to do performance reviews and benefit open enrollment, and by giving them technology and support to do that, they can go and do what, you know, their organization is actually created or founded to do. So I think it was kind of a mix of that. And I'm lucky that I ended up here because I don't know anywhere else where I could kind of use all those different, you know, things and also bring in my Jewish values. And so it's been great.
I appreciate your positive outlook on so much of the ability to really uplift the values, especially in a parsha where, like, this parsha is not easy, friends. There's so much conflict. I mean, between Yevamot, like this levirate marriage where, you know, if a brother's brother doesn't want to marry his brother's widow, like she can spit in his face. Like, that's real. That's not fun. That's not fun for anybody. And I always laugh because rules end up in places usually because somebody did the thing. And when you look at some of these things, they're a little nuts, Jake. Like, they're a little crazy. If you look at 25, 11, and 12, like, there's a conversation. If two people are fighting and a wife grabs for somebody's, we're going to say, private place because it's a family-friendly podcast, you're supposed to cut off her hand and show no pity. Like, that's not family-friendly, Gabe. It's not family-friendly. But there are clearly human issues at stake here, right? We are not perfect creatures, and I always say this. We're aiming for kind of an ideal community and imperfect world. And one of the things that I think matters are these rules that exist because things happen. So right after this, like, seemingly confusing section that we just read, we also say, like, you shouldn't have alternate weights on you. You know, you shouldn't have trick measures. You should have honest weights and honest measures so that you're able to do the things. Because everybody who does those things, everybody who's dishonest, everybody who acts in their own interests and not in the interest of the community, people who deal dishonestly, they are abhorrent. They're just, it's not good. And so I think that, look, I'm so thrilled to hear that you're working with organizations that might be struggling or looking for new designs or looking for new plans. And building community is really hard. And working organizations is really hard. And I think that when you are dealing with things that are not easy, right? I want to go back to her bio, and I know that I'm kind of skipping around, but when you talk about honest measures, time tracking, right? Time tracking is hard because you don't want people to go over their 40 hours a week, but sometimes they do go over their 40 hours a week, but then do you want to pay them overtime or do you try to give them comp time? What are the honest weights and measures there? You know, I always say that Torah is like what we can bring to everyday life, like how we can apply it to the everyday and how we can translate it into tangible tactics. And man, the work that you do, Jake, it's not easy. It's complicated. It has so many factors and degrees. And I don't know if I have a question. I'm just looking at you and I'm like, I don't know how you do it. Like, how do you ensure that you're trying to have these honest weights and measures when everything can be so subjective?
First of all, thank you. I really wouldn't say that the work I'm doing is, you know, all that special, but you're right. The work that I'm doing is trying to help businesses. because businesses, whether, again, for-profit, non-profit, like these businesses, this is not only their livelihood, but a lot of times this is, you know, all they know. I spoke to someone earlier that she's third generation, you know, president of the company that her family founded, right? So like a lot of it, it's more than just, oh yeah, here's what, you know, this company sells or that company sells. But you're right, it's extremely, extremely important that we look at the Parsha. And yes, it is a messed up Parsha. There's a lot of, you know, intricacies and weird tidbits to it. But I think when you take out of it, like, it's trying to make things as equal as possible. Not obviously in every situation, but, you know, it talks about equality. I think it said, you know, if a man has two wives and one that he doesn't like and one that he loves, if they both have firstborn, you know, males, like, you can't just give it to the one that you love. You have to be fair about it. Yeah, that may be a, you know, unpopular opinion, but that's what you need to do, right? You know, you need to allow anyone that's working for you to eat on the job. Rather, and I think it even specifies, like, whether it's human or animal. Like, these are some of the things where, yes, I know there's a lot of craziness in the Parsha, but, like, these are the things where you could really, like, pull from and say, if your organization takes these things to heart, not just paying people on time, but, you know, not withholding from, you know, laborer who's poor. These are just things that, Amanda, to your point, like, these are things that we should all be thinking and that companies should be thinking. And it's very hard to necessarily put those in place and live true to those and be true to those. But that's why it's important to, you know, not only does the government have laws in place to make sure, you know, that this stuff is there, but that's why it's good to have, you know, systems in place and, you know, people like myself and my colleagues to kind of talk to them and talk them through. I don't pretend to be like an HR expert. I'm not a lawyer. But I know the right people to be able to connect to get answers. Like I said, connector, problem solver. And I know the resources and technology from ADP that, you know, that they have in place. So between the two of those and the guidance from, you know, the government and, you know, the laws that are there and hopefully some of the values of these companies, like, people will do a better job at, whether they're Jewish, not Jewish, whatever, taking the lessons from this Torah portion to heart and making sure that there's equality, making sure that there's the rules laid out so that people can hopefully live harmoniously and not have to worry about these things that come up. You know, you didn't pay me, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. Like, it's laid out clearly, they adhere to it, and then they're able to keep doing what, hopefully, what they love doing.
I'm sure we could keep talking for hours about all of these interesting things, about this Torah portion has such a range of ideas, some of which are, like, directly applicable and so clearly tangible. As we said, the paying people fairly, letting people eat, like, all of those things are so directly, obviously, integral to, you know, our lives as modern contemporary people. And there's, like, all sorts of stuff that just does not, or hopefully does not, apply to us. And so I'm kind of, like, wrestling with that idea that there's just such a range, and we have to be able to, you know, kind of read all of it, take what we can. And even with the stuff that, like, isn't directly applicable, like, we do get some wisdom out of it, and we sometimes need to, like, massage it out a little bit, but we do eventually find it. I am curious, though, if you had one message, either from this Torah portion or just in life, that you wanted to share with the audience, if you had, you know, one call to action, one takeaway, what would that be?
I think it would be how important it is to have clear expectations and clear guidelines within a community, whether that's your business, whether that's your friend group, whether that's your relationship, your spouse, your significant other, your partner. Like, it's just super important to have clear expectations and clear guidelines. And that's what I try to tell my prospective clients, you know, before they become my clients. Like, I know you haven't had any issues. I know that everything's perfect, but you may want to make sure that you have this in place. I'm not saying that your employees are bad. I'm not saying that your cousin who's worked here for 75 years is going to try to, you know, put one over on you, but just the clear guidelines, clear, open communication, honesty from the get-go is super important. again, whether it's within your community, your relationships, or as I tell people that I'm talking to, within their business. It's super important to have these things laid out ahead of time, to have an employee handbook. You know, it's not making your company rigid, right? A lot of times people say, oh, we don't need rules, that's too rigid. No, you can still have a wonderful company culture. You can have great values. You can, you know, have a great vibe within your organization, but it's still so important, as the Parsha lays out. So obviously there's some, you know, extremes in there, but, you know, in an employee handbook, there's weird extremes in there too. Yeah, this would never happen, but should it happen, it's important to have the plan and to have it laid out. So that's what I would say, just in terms of from the Parsha, from, you know, their organization and relationships, have that clear communication, have those guidelines laid out. And then you have the ability to trust the people around you that you're all working towards a common goal.
All right, Manda, Idan, Jacob, this Torah portion is all about a ton of different laws and all of the things that happen. It's really just a list of laws and things that you're supposed to do. And it's like, it can honestly get a little boring and a little tedious. And honestly, I feel like I need a drink after, you know, reading all of it. And so today on Midrashic Mixology, we are proud to present the Legal Lager. We're going to start out by blotting out the memory of Amalek with a dark liquid, muddling together a handful of blackberries and half an ounce of lemon juice in a pint glass. The sweet blackberries and the sour lemon balance out the scales of justice. Top it off with a bottle of your favorite lager. I recommend Sam Adams Boston Lager because it's good and Boston feels appropriate for a legal-themed drink. For a non-alcoholic version, swap out the beer with ice and your favorite lemonade. That makes this a decent follow-up to last year's More Laws Lemonade. Nice. Good job, Gabe. Either way, throw in a few frozen berries to keep the beer cold and for garnish. And, as always, remember what Amalek did to you in the desert, but also blot out that memory. Yeah, I don't get it either. L'chaim.
Sorry, I walked away. I thought I was supposed to follow along and make the drink with you. You're just talking really quickly. That sounds delicious. I only got halfway through, but I like that.
Thank you. This is a pretty easy one for people. It's very simple. You take some berries, you take a lemon, you squish it up, you put a beer in. It's great. It's very fun, very easy, and it tastes nice when you want like more than a beer, but less than, you know, a whole like mixed shaken shenanigans.
Yeah, I like that. Simple but delicious.
Always, much like myself.
Well, Gabe, as you know, I'm always on the search for a beer that I actually like, and while I don't always find one, I do often love lemonade, so I appreciate that you brought me into this particular Midrashic Mixology and that I can at least refresh with you. And, I mean, more laws, more lemonade. Good job, Gabe. Very creative. I'm curious what iteration number 3 will be, and if there will be another lemonade. We'll find out. It'll be an adventure. Having said all of this, we have made it to Idan's favorite part of the show, the thank yous and closing cues. Jacob, Gabe, Idan, in Kitetse, we are reminded of so many norms that are expected of us in order to build a stronger community, many of which we spoke about today. What is the number one expectation or norm you would hope to help build if you were creating a healthy new community culture?
That's a good question. I'd say the absence of entitlement. I think if people realize that the equality of each person, and there's not that, you know, need for I deserve this or I deserve that or I should get this because I should do that, I think it just starts with a cleaner slate. And then like we talked about, if you have those clear expectations, you have those guidelines in place, you're set up for a long-term community.
Gabe and I used to talk about entitlement a lot and the idea of what it looks like in communities and what it means when you kind of earn something versus when you think that it's automatically deserved, and kind of even the difference in feel once you get the thing that you wanted when you've earned it versus when you think that you just automatically deserved it to begin with. And so I think that that's really difficult, especially when you're in a kind of a brainstorming, forming community, right? When you're in this kind of Israel place of trying to figure out where they're going to be and how to get there. it's kind of funny when you think about this idea that they have a promised land and they feel like they're entitled to it. It's promised to them. It's literally in the name. I'd be curious to see what would happen if that entitlement dropped. Probably a lot less repetition and, you know, maybe less things falling from the sky, but who knows? Gabe, what say you?
So, as y'all know, I'm a cantorial student. I'm somebody who sings with people a lot and tries to get groups of people singing. And singing isn't a thing that most people do on a regular basis, especially in front of people. Like, maybe in the car or in the shower, but, like, not in a big group setting. It's something that's really vulnerable. And especially when people don't know the music that well, or they think they might not know it, they don't sing along, or even if they do, they do it really quietly. And one of the things that I think I would want to encourage in a community is that we can be vulnerable and it's okay to make mistakes. In fact, that's how we learn things. I'll just say, in the name of he who said it, my friend and teacher, Charlie Kramer, taught me loud and proud, strong and wrong. If you're gonna make a mistake, make a really big mistake. Make it really loudly so that A, you know what you did wrong, and so that the teacher or the leader, or the person at the front of the room, or somebody next to you can say, hey, I think you're having trouble with this specific thing. Let me work with you on that. I would love to create a community where that's not just acceptable, but where that's the norm. Loud and proud, strong and wrong.
So I'm going to give a shout out to one of my favorite teachers at HEC, Dr. Alyssa Gray, who anytime anybody makes a mistake goes, that's a good mistake. That's a friendly mistake. That's a great error. And she makes it really easy for people to make the mistake because we don't have to be scared, right? Like, it's okay. Like, we made the mistake to get there. Or Gabe and I are taking a Sofrut class, which is learning how to write Torah calligraphy, like Hebrew and like special writing. And our teacher said, like, you know, in order to get good, you have to suck really bad at first. And you have to embrace it. And so I love that, Gabe, this idea of, like, just make the bold move. Take the big stroke and see what happens. Edan, I know that you are always a community builder and always have great advice about making sure that people feel heard and seen. And so I'm really interested to see what you have to say on this one.
This might feel, on, I guess, on theme for things I've said before. Self-care, mental health, I think, are most important. And I think that if I were to be building a community, maybe we have a whole day off, a mandated mental health day. Yeah. I know people try to wiggle those into their schedules that exist, but if we were to have one baked in, that'd be a good start, I think. Gabe messaged maybe a Shabbat, if you will. See, yeah, but people still do things on Shabbat. I work on Shabbat, right? I work at a synagogue. So I don't know. Yes, but also no, in that maybe your Shabbat is not on Shabbat. Seeing as my work schedule now works around recording on Tuesday nights for the podcast, working at a synagogue Friday night and sometimes on Saturdays, I have to find a different day of the week to be Shabbat. So maybe in my future community that I build, it's not a single day of the week for everybody or the same day of the week for everybody, but maybe it's mandated in that you have to pick one that's going to be your Shabbat.
Yeah, a lot of companies I'm talking to now are, and not enough, obviously, to your point, Edan, but a lot of companies are mandating that, giving just one day off every quarter, one day off a year, mandating, hey, this day, we're just giving the company off to promote mental health, not even doing anything specifically, but just take some time for yourself. And I think if we did more of that, I think a lot of the issues we deal with would not be as large. I love that idea.
What I'll actually really quickly add off of that is that what I found from my experience of forcing myself to really take a day off, it's weird because of all the freelance and gig work I do, I find myself, even when I'm not working on a Saturday or a Sunday, I find myself still doing little bits of work, answering emails, texts, planning little logistical things in my free time, when really it should be my free time. And so when I'm really scheduling a day and saying, okay, let's say Mondays, I'm not doing anything on Monday, no work, nothing. It feels really weird to not be doing anything remotely related to work stuff for any of the projects or, you know, people I work for. It's very weird. It feels very weird, and it feels really good to just not have to do anything. And forcing myself to do that is tough. But yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to say, stop doing that. Stop working on your days off. Don't do it. Take time off. schedule your day off, like a meeting. Make sure that people can't do the bookings.volman.com. I think for me, I know I was good last, and usually it's because I don't know what the answer is, but I think generally I would want people to always remember to delineate their wins. I recently ran a team that ran an incredible event for HEC, for the school that we go to, and the team was extraordinary. And on our first night, we would have these 10 o'clock meetings for only 2 nights. We were only there for 2 nights, but we met at 10 o'clock to kind of debrief the day and plan the next one. In our first meeting, my partner was ready to like go into logistics for the next day and just get started. And she took one look at my face and she was like, "Just kidding, Amanda has something to say." And I was like, "Let's delineate the wins. Today was a hard day. Let's talk about like the wins that we had and let's delineate them and let's like own them. And then from there, we can move on." And we did that. And we did that consistently. And I feel good about that. I think it's important. Like, I think all of us are, I'm not saying be oblivious, by the way. So, like, the things that go wrong, I think it's important to note, like, what can get fixed or what can be better. And I think that we do that. But I think once that's been acknowledged during the day, and hopefully, Jacob, as he said, like, you know, you acknowledge it before it gets worse. I think that you don't have to bring it up in the team meeting if you've already acknowledged it personally with somebody. I think it's okay for us to celebrate the wins and to say, like, wow, like, today we've gone 3 hours without complaining about food. Good job, Israelites. Today we went 1 week without blaming Moses for something. A+. You know, and, like, those things are good, too. And they're small. They're small milestones. But when you are walking mile after mile, like, those milestones add up, right? You know, and I think that's important. And I think that when we're building out norms, being able to be appreciative, being able to have gratitude, and being able to name those winning moments are the things that are going to make the team keep wanting to play. Which is to say, this is how I lead. Other people may lead differently. It's all an important conversation to have. And Jake, if people want to continue this conversation with you, if they want to talk to you about either ADP, not ADT, but ADP, and kind of just talking about the work that you do, how can they best find or follow you?
I thought this was an audition for a full-time slot on this podcast. So I assumed I would be here next week and the following and the following. But people can get a hold of me. LinkedIn is probably easiest. Jacob Stoe, HR, S-T-O-E-H-R. As Amanda would say, it's in the name. So if I focus on HR, you know, that's not really my last name. I just had to change it for this line of work. But no, Jacob Store, S-T-O-E-H-R. Same email, jacob.store@adp.com. And would always love to, again, help however possible, small, large organizations, nonprofit, for-profit. Happy to always chat.
Incredible. I am really thrilled to have gotten to learn with and from you today. This has been super fun. I'm not sure if somebody had said to me, like, Amanda, you're going to speak with somebody who specializes in payroll. Like, I would have been like, this is going to be great. But it has been great. It's been, like, really phenomenal. And you've been able to really make this come alive. And I'm truly grateful for that. And, you know, talk about delineating wins. And so, Jacob, any last words, thoughts, concerns, or jokes before we close out this episode?
No, I guess come back next week during my full-time slot for some jokes. But no, this was a lot of fun. You guys are great. I love what you're doing, bringing the Parsha into the real world, which isn't done all the time. So this is great. I'm looking forward to tuning in now moving forward.
I'm so thrilled to have you as a fan. And for Gabe, you might want to be careful because it sounds like Jake is gunning for your co-host slot. And it's good to know that he wants to come back on one day. Well, we'll bring him back on. It'll be super fun. Thank you, Jacob, for joining us today. It's been an incredible insight into, like, how to take something that seems so far afield from what's going on in the desert to bring it into, like, a real life situation that we can kind of hold on to and try to acknowledge and be able to be a part of. Thanks to Gabe for making maybe one too many jokes this week, but I really enjoyed them. Thank you to Idan for reminding us all that it's really important for us to remember to take those breaks, but also to make them real breaks. Not to shortchange yourself, right? Like, this whole thing is about making sure that you're paid what you're owed. Don't shortchange yourself. Make sure that you're also giving yourself some honest weights and measures. That's important. And thank you to all of our listeners. And of course, to Kate for making us sound awesome. Sorry, don't want to forget Kate. Thank you, Kate. We will continue to try to pay you on time all the time as best we can and keep up a good track record. We appreciate your patience. And thank you to all our listeners, of course, for listening in every week. We're so psyched to be on this journey with you. And hey, we're entering the promised land soon. Get excited about it. It's going to be a great time. I can't imagine what will happen next, but I'm sure Gabe can because he'll have your rundown. Stay tuned for the conclusion coming at you soon. So, Gabe, do you think it was fair that I basically asked Jacob if he was able to, you know, fix all of the financial and inequality issues within the Jewish worlds in the duration of one podcast?
Well, I know we already had some Talmudic stuff today, but I will say, you're not obligated to complete the work, Jacob, but neither are you free to ignore it.
That also comes from Pirkei Avot. That's where the whole Ben Bagbag thing came from. But just making sure that we go back to this portion, I do think that it's really difficult because it kind of showcases humanity at not its best.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of negative commandments in this Torah portion. A lot of do not do this thing. And as you said in the conversation, like those probably came from somebody did a thing that everybody agreed, or at least some people agreed, should not be done.
And it sounds like, as I said before, that Torah tends to kind of showcase the world as what we might look like in an ideal society in this imperfect world. And that's the type of world that I think Jacob is also dealing with, right? Organizations that are trying their best to create warm and welcoming communities and good work cultures and safe places for people to feel good and productive in, while acknowledging that, you know, nobody's perfect and we're all human and we're trying.
Totally. And I know that I made the joke about the Pirkei Avot quote before of the you're not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to ignore it. But that's exactly what we're talking about here. Any little thing you do that puts a little bit more light, a little bit more justice in the world, that's good. That's great. That's what we're called to do. And so I think whether it's Jacob and ADP just trying to get businesses to do a little bit more for their people, or whether it's this podcast trying to bring a little bit more Torah into the world, or whether it's really any person just doing that one random act of kindness during the day, that brings us closer to that, you know, kind of ideal world that you're talking about.
And speaking of ideal worlds and people working really hard, I want to take this moment to really shout out Kate Griffin and Edon Waldman, who work so hard every single week to make sure that these episodes not only get out, but get out in a high quality. We don't think you understand the hours it takes to make one podcast episode, but you know who does? Kate Griffin, our editor. And you know who also does? Edon Waldman, who did the editing job solely by himself before we brought Kate onto the team. And so before we say anything else, first, a huge thank you to both of you. You're really incredible, and we're so lucky to have you as part of this podcast family. And to our listeners, please know that we pay what we hope is a really good wage for the hard work that they do, but we can't do that without your help. And so if you're still listening, and we hope that you are, please feel free to go to www.drinkinganddroshing.com and hit that support us button, because we honestly believe that Edon and Kate are worth more than we are able to pay them. They're worth a bajillion dollars and jewels and rubies and crystals. But we're just really lucky that they're part of our team. And we love them. And we hope you love them too. So help us support them and make sure that we're able to, you know, pay them on time. Edon, we paid you on time, right?
Yeah. Whenever I remember to ask to be paid on time, I am then paid appropriately on time. Totally.
That's exciting. So can we raise a glass to that?
L'chaim.
Amazing. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Hi, I'm Jacob Storr, and you're listening to Drinking and Droshing, Torah with a Twist. And I think Gabe's drink should have had White Claw in it, because then there ain't no laws when you're drinking White Claws. But there are plenty of laws in this week's Torah portion. 74, to be exact.